radioalbion.com.
Well, that's the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines and corner scenes to footwork in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot.
Hello and welcome to the Radio Albion Roundtable. Today's date is Monday the 2nd of May 2022 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. It's May Day. It's a public holiday over here in Britain. I don't think it is in America, but we do have two co-hosts with me here today. We have Grandpa Dan and Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from the other side of the pond. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
You know, you guys are talking about health issues and things like that, and the only thing I could think of is how humid it is around here. I tell you, I'm not going to take my good health for granted anymore.
It's very important. Health is very, very important. That's something that I stress to our listeners, to look after your health. Grandpa, how are you doing? How is your health? Do you want to let the listeners know?
Well, I'm kind of still at a standstill on my health issues. Now I'm back to, I have to search for my own doctor that takes the insurance because I have to go to a different doctor now for the latest tumor they believe they found. So yeah, no, it's always fun dealing with the system.
It's always a struggle, isn't it? It's always a struggle, which is why it's always good to hear some good news. And I really wanted to start out today with some good news. And I think the best news we've heard in a long time is Elon Musk buying Twitter, which really came straight out of the blue. And of course, there are criticisms of Elon Musk. He's very, very wealthy. He's an oligarch. He's all tied in with the government. He's involved in neuralinks, wanting to link people up with the hardware that he's been testing out on monkeys. Those are all the negative sides of this. But there are positive sides of it. He does appear to be genuinely supportive of free speech. And the reason why I say that is because when he explains why free speech is important, he explains it well. He says, you know, you need to have free speech in order to have democracy. You need to be able to hear every idea, and then the most popular ideas float to the top. And of course, this is exactly how the internet used to be. We used to have algorithms, and the most popular websites would get boosted up in the algorithm. So when anybody put in a search term and the search term was linked to that particular website, that would rise to the top. And ever since Donald Trump got elected, they broke the search engines, basically. They destroyed the search engines. And now you just get CNN and the BBC and all the alternative media that is probably more popular than the mainstream media. They're all on the second or the third page of the rankings. And then they did the same with Twitter. And instead of the most popular tweets rising to the top, they shadow ban people, they ban people. And Twitter is a really good example of how democracy could function, because you could get people saying things, and then the most people that vote or upvote that tweet means that that tweet is going to rise to the surface. So the best idea is going to rise to the surface. It was also great because you could mark down people's ideas. You could downvote people's tweets and they would disappear. And of course, when you vote for what is most popular, then you end up with populism. So Twitter was becoming supportive of populism, and there were lots of very, very popular people on there, right-wing people, nationalist people, that all got banned. All the interesting people have been banned from Twitter. So the fact that Elon Musk is buying it, and his reason for buying it, is that he sees free speech as essential for a democracy, and he sees Twitter as being a tool for that, I think is really good. And of course, the left are freaking out about this because they use Twitter to censor people. What they have done is they've removed all the criticism of certain government policies under the guise of combating hate speech. And it means that there is no opposition, basically, to the Democrats on Twitter, or no opposition to Globo Homo, if you want to call it that. So I think this is fantastic news. And I've got some bullet points of what he says he wants to actually do with this. But I just thought I'd get your views first, Matt, on the importance of free speech to democracy. And what do you think of Elon Musk buying Twitter?
Well, I might be the wrong guy to ask about democracy. I don't vote. I have about a 20-page paper explaining why I don't. But with Musk buying Twitter, you have what amounts to a moderate libertarian, who at the very least isn't going to censor us, or at least that's what he says. there's a lot of pressure on him right now. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. Clearly, the left, which is the ruling class, there's one and the same, are terrified of us. What makes matters worse is that they have never, they've never really heard our side put intelligently before. All they know is these caricatures, most of which are just invented in their minds. They come up against one of us, and they're very soft because they don't have any opposition. They come up against one of us who knows what he's talking about. We're going to rip them to pieces. And I think dimly they're aware of this. Now, so, I mean, free speech is an abstraction. It's what people are using it for. And I've been a critic of John Stuart Mill's, you know, his famous On Liberty in the 19th Century, who created that argument that you get, you know, the so-called marketplace of ideas, which I think is largely a myth. There's too many assumptions built into it. I don't think the bulk of the population gives a damn about what's true or not. I think they care about what's convenient for them. Many people don't even know how to evaluate an argument. And I think it's more of a race to the bottom than, you know, a way whereby truth can come to the surface. Usually it's the loudest or the best funded point of view that comes to the surface. Regardless, we can use this mechanism now to challenge the system, to challenge the left. Remember, the left system, they're all one and the same concept, regime. And that's why they're terrified. And this freak out over this, you know, libertarian idea suggests that I'm right, that there's a psychological component to this, but that censorship and violence and shutting people out, people that don't understand, is now an integral part of liberal ideology. Now, we've known that for a long time, but now it's official. When you have everyone in the regime complaining about this, censorship is an integral part of the liberal ideology and how the regime operates. And that's the big takeaway here, that it's not so much that we would censor them, although I would, but that there's a marketplace of ideas that they can function in. At a minimum, they can function in it. And they're going to have to figure out a way to put pressure on this man to do something, like they did with Trump, to get him to not to do this. Because deep down, all of these people are terrified of what we have to say, the statistics, everything else we're able to bring to bear on any issue that they've never heard before. And so they don't have a proper response for it. I'm guaranteeing you this was at the root of this mass freakout. And at least at the moment, it is fun to see.
Well, they do seem to be absolutely terrified of genuine democracy. They tell us democracy is the important thing, and yet there you have a platform where people put out their messages and then people essentially vote for them. And we can't have that. We can't have people voting on ideas. Grandpa, what are your thoughts on freedom of speech and Elon Musk buying Twitter?
Well, when you get down to, you know, the brass tacks, as they say, just from a logical standpoint, you can figure out who has the losing argument, because they're the side that demands that their opposition be silenced. We don't have, I mean, you know, when you look at the amount of big name media that the left is able, you know, that the liberals are able to put out, I mean, we don't have anyone like that. We're basically, when we talk about right wingers or nationalists or however you want to put it, on a platform like Twitter, I mean, you're just talking about regular people. And this tells you something, that when you have these well-funded, well-backed, you know, highly promoted media figures on the other side, and when you get down to it, they're scared of normal, they're afraid of normal people being able to come on there and destroy their arguments. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. You know who has the losing argument when their whole position is basically you shouldn't be allowed to speak. You talked about the search engines being broken, and they have literally, I mean, it is beyond aggravating, because it's not just the news, it's not just politics. They've literally, because of, I mean, they have tinkered with it and tinkered with it. They didn't want, you know, images that were racist. You know, they had a deal. What was it? Google Images couldn't differentiate between black people and primates. So they had to mess with that. And they messed with it so much that if you're looking up, like, oh, I'm looking up this specific part for this specific automobile, you can't find it. The engines are absolutely broken. It just throws a bunch of gibberish at you. They've absolutely basically broken the internet. Now, another after effect of this is, because they have for years now Been kicking everyone off of Twitter that doesn't fit the narrative, that doesn't support the narrative. And real, for all their talk about, you know, we have so much divisiveness in the country, that is what they have promoted. I mean, you've got all of the people that have been banned from Twitter and Facebook, et cetera, and they've gone over to platforms such as Gab. And all you've done is create an echo chamber. The people that are left on Twitter, by and large, are going to be people that support the narrative, support the regime. And, I mean, yes, there's some, you know, middle of the road, just kind of normie conservative people. But by and large, Twitter is the platform for people that support the narrative. And then you go over to these other platforms, such as Gab or whatnot, and you have the people that have been banned. And everybody's just talking with people that already agree with them. And they get this impression that, well, everybody agrees with my point of view. And it's really, I mean, it's really an unhealthy situation, I believe, as far as, you know, public discourse goes.
Well, I would agree there. You end up on each side. Everybody think, well, everybody else agrees with what I'm saying. And it's not an accurate gauge of public feeling. We need to have the left conversing with the right. And I dare say there are quite a few people on the left who would agree with that. Particularly the liberal-minded folks, the old-style liberalism, more so than the progressive liberalism that just wants to silence everyone and censor everyone. But I do know there are people on the left that like a good debate just as much as there are people on the right. Well, let's have a look at some of these ideas that he has for this. And I'm getting this from a news article. I think it was a Yahoo news article. They say Musk's feistiest priority, but also the one with the vaguest roadmap, is to make Twitter a politically neutral digital town square for the world's discourse that allows as much free speech as each country's laws allow. And straight away, as this news came out, there was somebody from the EU that said, oh, yes, well, he's going to have to obey EU law. And in America, Joe Biden put out his new Ministry of Truth or Ministry of Disinformation, which is fronted by this crazy woman who sings Mary Poppins songs about coronavirus and other things. And she's going to be the new disinformation czar in America. So it does seem as if the politicians are worried about this. But surely it's an American company. And if he wants to have free speech on there that is within the law, it's going to be within American law. And that was what was so great about the internet, because most of these companies were based in America and they kept within American laws, where you're not allowed to incite violence against anybody, you're not allowed to make credible threats, but you are allowed to criticize certain groups in society, which you may not be able to do in parts of Europe. And I know that in Germany, they tried to get Gab to change their policy. They said, well, Gab is available in Germany. And in Germany, we have very tight speech laws, particularly around events concerning World War II. And you have to change your policies. Otherwise, we're going to ban you in Germany. And Gab just said, well, ban us in Germany then. We are not going to change our laws to accommodate Germany. We are an American company. And I would hope that Elon Musk would do the same, and that if Twitter did get banned in Europe, people would just use a VPN and get around it. I think most people have access to VPNs. So I would hope that he would keep it within American law and not change things to accommodate repressive laws in countries in Europe. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Matt? Do you think he would do that? I mean, Gab have done that, or do you think he would change it to comply with European law?
Well, that's kind of, well, first of all, the fact that the state is enforcing liberalism, this again shows you what it really is. Yeah, they talk in libertarian terms, they talk about freedom, but they don't believe a word of it. And they'll just throw labels around without any understanding, rather than actually, you know, delving into what it is that they hate so much. It's a caricature. The question is whether or not Musk wants to go down the same route that Trump did. Trump, regardless of any criticism of him, the guy has got extraordinary courage to place himself in the media assault, libelous every day, and continue to go forward more or less sane. Is Musk willing to do that? Is Musk willing to lose possibly billions of dollars? I mean, there's a million weapons that the regime has, the state, corporations. He has to work with a lot of other companies here. And if they start shutting him out, and the regime starts pushing, say, another platform solely based on this libertarian idea, which is so harmless in and of itself, or so it would seem. You know, if he wants to work with these other companies, he may be forced to change. It depends on how much courage this guy has. I mean, he sees what happened to Trump. He knows now it's going to happen to him. And you know, all the lawsuits and all the boycotts by other companies and everyone else he has to work with, yeah, that could destroy him personally, and it could destroy him financially. And you know, it's easy to forget that media billionaires are already billionaires. They've proven over and over. I've been saying this since I was a teenager. They've proven over and over again that they're willing to lose billions of dollars rather than include any kind of opposition stance. They've, you know, CNN and New York Times, they've lost millions of readers and viewers over the years because of the ideology, the bias, the sensationalism and all that. And all they would have to do is change even just a little bit and get some of that back. I mean, the NFL, all these companies, they are a part of the regime. They adopt liberalism and they lose a fortune. But they're not willing to do anything about that. They're willing to throw the money away because they have income from other sources. So it proves that ideology is even more important than the profit drive. It's even more important than money. It's more important than even influence. That's how obsessive the ideology is. And that explains the freakout over Musk.
Well, so the question comes down to, does he have the testicular fortitude to go against them? Well, the next point is Musk's longstanding interest in AI is reflected in one of the most specific proposals he outlined in his merger announcement, the promise of making the algorithms open source to increase trust. He's talking about the systems that rank content to decide what shows up on users' feeds. So I think what he's talking about there is having algorithms that boost the comments that get the most upvotes and nothing else, and removing the censorship, which is a positive thing. Grandpa, what do you think of what he says he's going to do with the algorithms here?
Well, it gets rid of shadow banning. I mean, you know up front if your posts, whether your posts are actually showing up in people's feeds or not. The thing with shadow banning is, you know, you're posting away and you haven't gotten any notifications that says, oh, you know, your post is suspended or you got to delete this tweet or whatever. But you're not getting any traction, you're getting any responses. And you're thinking, well, this is pretty interesting. I'm surprised nobody is, you know, responding and it's not getting a lot of action here. And it winds up that no one's seeing it, you know, but by having it open source, people, it gets rid of shadow banning. You know whether or not you know, people are seeing your content and they just don't like it or whatever. And I do think it's interesting, you know, you brought up the EU and saying, well, they're going to have to follow our laws and whatnot. And I think, you know, of course, this is all speculation. We don't know how any of this is going to play out or go down. But I would just say that the EU stepping up and banning Twitter, it's not the same as threatening to ban Gab. I mean, you know, that's a relatively small platform compared to Twitter. I think if it were to come to that, I think Elon would be very tempted to call their bluff on that. You know, you're talking about the EU. I mean, this is not just one country. It's just not. I mean, it's a very large, you know, you've got all of these countries together and the EU says, well, we'll ban Twitter. I think he would be in a pretty good position. And again, this is all hypothetical, to call their bluff and say, well, do it. Let's see you do it. I don't know. I think the EU would possibly blink first on that one.
That'd be good, wouldn't it? You know, I mean, he could call their bluff. He could say, well, don't you like democracy? I mean, that's what we've got here. If people don't like what somebody is saying, they can always block them. They're not going to upvote them. If people like what they're saying, they're going to vote for them. I mean, it is basically democracy in action. Well, he also talks about spam bots that mimic real people. They've been a personal nuisance to Musk, whose popularity on Twitter has inspired countless impersonator accounts that use his image and name, often to promote cryptocurrency scams that look as if they are coming from the Tesla CEO. And when I read that, I wondered whether he was aware that so many actual commenters have been accused of being Russian bots. I mean, they pretty much say anybody that was supportive of Russia before the special operation in Ukraine, anybody that was supportive of Trump or what have you, they would just write them off as Russian bots. And they would say, we got rid of X amount of Russian bots today. And you'd know loads of people that had all been banned from Twitter. And they'd all been labeled as a Russian bot. So that seems more relevant to us than this spam bots thing. I mean, they're annoying, But they're not really that much of a problem. I think you can usually tell if it's spam bots. I mean, we get quite a lot of them on Telegram that are promoting these cryptocurrency scams. So, I mean, what do you think of the idea that people are Russian bots? You must have come across that, Grandpa. You come across that, Matt? I'm not sure which one of you would be most relevant to talk to about this. Matt, Russian bots. Have you ever been accused of being a Russian bot?
I've been accused of everything you could think of. And most unfortunately, the FSB hasn't sent me a dime for all my efforts. What a shame! If I get on their payroll, all of our problems are over. I tell you that right now. But that's never going to happen. But accused of any pro-Russian argument. This goes back at least since the Trump campaign, that somehow the absurd idea that Russia had anything to do with it. There's not even a unified accusation. Just says something about meddling, and there's no more detail than that. I've read all the material on it. So the answer is yes, and I've been called a lot worse than that. I'm not sure if bot is an insult. I don't think it's about me. I think it's about, you know, what I say. So, yeah, that's what happens when you have people who don't know anything, and it's just another personal attack, I guess.
Yeah, it's like if they think, well, nobody's going to criticize our policies. If they do, they must be a bot. They can't be a genuine human being. You ever been accused of being a Russian bot, Grandpa? I'm sure you must have done.
Well, I've been banned for so long that it's almost hard to remember. But I'm like Dr. J there. I'm still waiting on my check from Putin. Hasn't showed up yet. I'm honestly pretty disappointed. I mean, I'd accept the rubles, Bitcoin, just whatever. And yeah, I'm still waiting. And it's funny you bring that up because you'd earlier referenced that the government now here in the U.S. has officially now established a Ministry of Truth as a part of the Department of Homeland Security, and the woman they put in charge of this was one of the ones going around. She's in charge of this Department of Disinformation, and she was one of the ones running around dismissing the Hunter Biden laptop and saying it's just a Russian propaganda, and she's going to be in charge of all of this. Something worth pointing out here as well, with talking about the bots and things such as this, is whenever you have somebody say we're going to have a platform, and I remember when Gab first started, they ran into this. You come out and say we're going to have free speech. And you will have people come on and trash it. And what I mean by that is they will say, oh, okay, well, we have free speech. And then they will post things, that are just clearly over the bounds. The point here is that you're good. No matter how much of a free speech platform you're going to have, there is going to be a need for moderation. And you just have to accept that. I mean, otherwise it just becomes a mess. And you'll have people say, well, I remember, like I say, I was on Gab during especially the early times, and people would come on there and purposely say things that were really honestly illegal. And I mean, post specific threats and things such as that, and trash the program and put them in a position to where they would have to come in and ban them or shut their. And then they say, see, they don't really have free speech. I mean, we have to be realistic. What does free speech mean? If you can go on there and state your ideas and, make your arguments and confront people and go back and forth and all that, that is what we're talking about, free speech. It's just like here in the U.S., they've somehow, free speech as it's laid out in the Constitution is supposed to be about political speech. And, we're in a situation where that's the one thing that's really banned. But yet pornography is considered by the court system in the U.S. to be free speech, which is just, of course, absolutely, it's absolutely absurd. If you're on a platform like Gab or Twitter, you're not on there so that you can be, you open your feed and it's full of, say, porn bots or things such as that. It's supposed to be actual for political speech to go back and forth. But, if this were to come about, and again, this is a big if here as far as that's going to happen, the realistic sense is there will be some moderation, and people, if people can come on there and actually voice their ideas and make their arguments, I mean, that would be a big win, but again, you're going to have to expect that people are going to go on there and purposely try to create a situation to where they have to come in and basically crack down with some moderation, and that's how it'll look.
Well, I would have thought people could moderate it themselves, can't they? They can block people. I mean, that was the whole idea. If you didn't like what someone was saying, then you could block what they were saying. And also this Hunter Biden story, this has come up as well. I mean, he's made particular criticism of what he described as Twitter's incredibly inappropriate 2020 blocking of a New York Post article on Hunter Biden, which of course may have affected the election. A lot of the people that voted for Biden said that they would not have voted for him if they had known about this article. And Twitter was able to just ban anybody that promoted the article, and nobody knew about it. I mean, the final thing that I wanted to bring up here, he also says he wants Twitter to authenticate all humans, which has got people worried because people think that means that they're going to lose anonymity. But it could just be a simple pop-up that comes up which asks you to select 6 photos of a school bus. You know, those gotchas, captures that come up every so often. It could just be something like that, just to make certain that it is actually a real person there. And finally, he's also said that he's not talking about banning people outright. And there would just be a suspension. There would be no banning of people outright, which would be good. And I know people have tried to get back on there. People have signed up again and they've got banned again straight away, because this isn't going to happen for another few months yet. They've got to organize it all while they make the changeover. And I think also people that were banned years ago, they may have forgotten their login credentials. I mean, the greatest thing you could do is just reinstate everybody and then say, well, if you don't like what somebody is saying, you can just block them. But I guess that's probably too much wishful thinking for me. Matt, have you got any final thoughts on all of this before we move on to the next subject?
Well, quickly, you know, Grandpa brought up a point that I've been dealing with for a long time. Back when Facebook was freer, and now because I have a Gab account that I keep forgetting about, you have all of these people allegedly on our side with swastikas everywhere talking about bringing back the concentration camps, slaughtering Jews, slaughtering, you know, and I've written number, even if I didn't know them, I've written these guys saying either you're working for the other side or you are an immature, drunken idiot. I've seen this happen. I've seen this happen at rallies. And, you know, I've yelled at them. I certainly have the right to do that. I have a Gab account, and you see some of the worst stuff. I say, first of all, we don't believe that nonsense. And what are you trying to do? You deserve to be banned. I'd ban you if I was running this. Gab was, I guess maybe still is, really bad that way. So you have people who just don't have the maturity, whether they may be our enemies, as well as those allegedly on our side who just don't have any impulse control. I think you guys are begging to be banned. You're part of the problem here. I've seen this all over the place. I've seen it at rallies. I've seen it even just in personal conversation. You know, shut up. I mean, if this is what all you're going to do, you have no right to be on. We don't want you on our side. You're ridiculous. This has been going on for a long time. They're their own worst enemies in this case.
Well, this is always the issue, isn't it? You're always going to have people that are agent provocateurs, that are deliberately going to be inciting violence and then trying to associate with nationalists. Grandpa, what are your final thoughts on all of this? And then do you want to move on to the next subject?
Well, yeah, and it's just like Dr. Johnson's pointed out. You do have that, and he articulated it a lot better than I did. But the one final point I would make here is, you know, people getting upset over, you know, the fact that, you know, they're saying they want to authenticate that these are actual people. And you know, regardless of how this plays out, I'm done with social media. I've really come to the realization that by and large it's a waste of time. But I will say this, and people should keep it in mind, you know, people, and I understand the importance of anonymity and being able to really feel that you can freely speak your political ideas. Believe me, been there, done that, understand that. People need to understand there is no such thing as anonymity on the internet. If you're going to be posting things that are going to bring you heat, if they really want to bring the heat to you, they'll find out who you are, because you've got the whole apparatus of the government at work here. You know, they may put something in front of it and say, oh, well, you know, the government didn't search down and, you know, track down and find out who you are. The media somehow managed to magically do that. It's a lie. So if you're going to be, you know, if you're going to be making spicy posts on the internet with the idea that you're completely anonymous and everything's good, if they want to find out who you are, they've got the whole intelligence apparatus. Trust me, they'll find out who you are. So a person would be well served to always bear that in mind. You know, they can dig through your social media posts and take things in whatever context and make it look like whatever. So I've heard others say it, and it's well spoken. Don't post anything on there that basically anything you say can and will be used against you. So you should always bear that in mind. Yeah. Moving on to my story, and it almost feels bad, you know, like I'm picking on the mentally deficient. But my choice of a story is to once again pick on my my favorite geopolitical moron, which is Liz Truss, which the UK insists on foisting upon the world. And here she is, our story today. She's calling for a global NATO. We don't have enough NATO in Europe. We need a global one. The story starts off, says, the world order created after the Second World War and the Cold War isn't working anymore. So the West needs, quote, a global NATO to pursue geopolitics anew, UK Foreign Secretary Liz Truss argued. In a major foreign policy speech on Wednesday, Truss also urged the U.S.-led bloc to send more heavy weapons, tanks, and airplanes to the Ukraine and said China would face the same treatment as Russia if it doesn't, quote, play by the rules. My vision is a world where free nations are assertive and in the ascendant, where freedom and democracy are strengthened through a network of economic and security partnerships, Truss said in a speech at a Mansion House banquet in London, dubbing this arrangement the network. The network of liberty. Truss argued it was necessary because the economic and security structures developed after 1945, such as the UN Security Council, have been bent out of shape so far. They have enabled rather than contained aggression. Geopolitics is back, she announced. The collective West and its allies need to supply Kiev with heavy weapons, tanks, airplanes, digging deep into our inventories, ramping up production, Truss said, because the objective is to push Russia out of the whole of Ukraine and rebuild the country along the lines of a new Marshall Plan. The war in Ukraine is our war. It is everyone's war because Ukraine's victory is a strategic imperative for all of us. Beyond that, NATO must ensure that the Western Balkans and countries like Moldova and Georgia have the resilience and capabilities to maintain their sovereignty and freedom and uphold the sacrosanct open door policy, Truss said. Now, it's worth pointing out that she is so competent. She also holds the title of Minister for Women and Equalities. I think she's probably much more qualified for that position than her position as foreign secretary. She's an embarrassment everywhere she goes. Now she's calling for they talk about how this is so much, you know, the Ukraine is the strategic imperative for us. Of course, it's never explained to us exactly why that is. As we all know, most people can't find the Ukraine on a map, but we got to send them more weapons. We got to send them more tanks, more heavy artillery. And usually, of course, by we, they mean mostly the United States. I remember when the Libya attack happened, the mighty British Navy floated over there. And like the first night they ran out of missiles and they had to pretty much go home because one night we're out of missiles. This is also reflective of my favorite. Well, it's just a sad thing. The UK, you know, Britain wants to LARP as though they're still an empire. You know, and nobody, it's like they haven't accepted the fact that you're just almost an irrelevant an irrelevant island nation now. You know, I mean, when you get to the reality on the ground, Britain isn't anymore. Britain's, are we going to get involved? Well, Britain is the more, you don't want to anger the British Empire. It's not any more of a threat than if Japan says, well, we may sail the Imperial Japanese Navy your way. Nobody's going to really take that very seriously. But they do. You see these officials and these politicians. And by the way, of course, she is, of course, a Tory. She's part of the quote unquote conservative party. If the leftist party, if the Liberal Party, the Labour Party in Britain really wanted to come to power, if they all weren't part of the same team, then you know all the Labour Party would have to do is just come out with an anti-war platform, and they can sit here and talk about this as our imperative, our values, and our democracy all you want to, but by and large, war is going to be hard to sell to people, especially when you've got economic hard times at home. We know that the current British government is facing all kinds of scandals and isn't real popular, as far as I know. I know Sven will be able to speak a little more to that, but you know, It's always a hard sell. They're trying to sell a war that most people with any common sense are going to look at and say, well, this doesn't have anything to do with me. How is this going to make my life any better? The Labour Party could just come out and say we're anti-war, and probably come in and do real well in the elections. But of course, they're not going to do that because they're all just flip sides of the same coin. Dr. Johnson, I'll kick it off to you. I'm sure you're a big fan of Liz Truss. The question is, are you a big fan of her foreign policy or of her no doubt standing work as the Minister for Women and Equalities.
You know, my brain is a very powerful thing, and sometimes it shuts down when I hear things like that, just as a matter of self-protection. It's almost like a mental vomiting. And that's what I was fighting that the whole time you were talking. Is this the same woman where Lavrov, foreign minister in Russia, tricked her into saying that we'll never accept the Russian sovereignty over Rostov and Voronezh?
Yes.
I think it's the same woman. Yes. And the point is, he knew how ignorant this woman was and kind of maneuvered her. Of course, those two towns, major towns and medieval towns, very close to the Ukrainian border. And I don't remember exactly how he stated it, but he acted like these were somehow new acquisitions. And of course, they're within Russian territory. And she came out and said, we don't accept their sovereignty over these two Russian towns on the close to the Ukrainian border. And first of all, this typical Lavrov doing stuff like that. He's well aware of what he's up against. And so making fun of these people is easy. Even when you remember, Lavrov does the dirty work that Putin as a diplomat doesn't ordinarily do. You want the Russian point of view, government circles go to him. You know, Putin just puts it in very vague diplomatic terms. Lavrov just comes out and says it. He condemned the persecution of January 6th and anti-white racism in America. You know, he just doesn't care. And this is the level of ignorance that he knew how bad it was. He knew that Russia is this big black spot in the American mind. They really just don't know. And if anything, I mean, we talked about the not being able to find Ukraine on a map being very closely correlated with people who want an invasion of Ukraine. And even Russia. And he's aware of how ignorant people are and can make fun of them. And she is, you know, making statements like that shows you she doesn't know anything. She's given a script. And who writes the script is an interesting thing. Is it intelligence? Is it military planners? Is it, you know? And I'm also happy that Grandpa said that, you know, Britain still has this illusion that it's, or delusion, that it's an empire. I've been saying the same thing for the U.S. for a long time. The U.S. tries to throw its weight around, you know, without money, without gold, with the military falling to pieces, and still starts giving orders and threatens China and threatens Russia and now threatening India and Pakistan and places like this, knowing full well it doesn't have the capacity to do much about it economically or any other way. England is far in advance of the U.S. in that respect. But it is this delusional idea that the U.S. still matters, that NATO, who has been useless, now somehow should be globally. And of course, this woman doesn't realize that there's been many attempts to create a CETO in Southeast Asia, kind of the Asian NATO. This stuff has been done before and has never worked. The assumption that the U.S. is in any kind of a leadership position, that somehow its military is invincible, that runs deep in ruling circles. And it just goes to show intelligence doesn't matter. Your ability to conform, having the right connections, going to the right university, being a member of the right club, that matters more than anything in all ruling circles in the collective West, as she says. The other thing I want to point out is her comment. You have to, you know, they say something, but what is meant by these words is something altogether different. And she talked about these economic networks. That's how liberalism is going to take over. Of course, she's talking about free trade. She's talking about the takeover of the globe, countries all over the place, by corporations, which, of course, has been the case for a long time, although there's plenty of holdouts. There's plenty of national states out there. I don't think she knows that, but whoever wrote the script knows that, that this is really an economic matter. This is about corporate profits. And the state is really just reactive. The state does their bidding. And it's kind of buried in there, but that's what liberalism is, too. You know, censorship is based on the rule of private capital. I mean, private capital more powerful than governments. We're going to take over Ukraine and rebuild it according to the old Marshall Plan, which, of course, I guarantee you just know much about that. But the point was to create a liberal institution, enforcing all the rules that we're fighting over here that have no support over there. But she'll impose it with violence, which is what NATO's a military organization. She's saying liberalism can only spread except by the profit motive on the one hand and guns on the other. She doesn't know she's saying that, But clearly anyone who knows anything is going to understand that's exactly what she's talking about.
Yeah, I was. What interested me about this was the bit where it says that we need to send heavy weapons, tanks and airplanes to Ukraine, and China would face the same treatment if Russia doesn't play by the rules. So China's going to be punished if Russia doesn't play by the rules. How are they going to punish China? Are they going to send heavy weapons, tanks and airplanes to the Uyghurs? Are they going to send all these weapons to Kazakhstan? I think they tried a color revolution in Kazakhstan recently and it didn't work out, did it? Russia and the Kazakhstanis went in there and they put a stop to it. So I'm not quite sure what she means there. Perhaps she means Taiwan. I mean, is this admitting basically that Ukraine is just being used as a proxy to go after Russia? I mean, it does seem to be. That's what she's implying here. Perhaps she's going to go into Taiwan and start heavily arming Taiwan and provoking them into talking about death to the Chinese or something like that. It does seem wherever NATO meddles in the world, it causes problems. Grandpa, you know quite a lot about Taiwan. You know about the politics there. Does that feature in the rest of this news story?
Well, I can tell you, if they try to pull a Ukraine and Taiwan, that will end very quickly. I mean, China's been very upfront on the Taiwan question, and they do. I mean, they're literally the same people. I mean, they're Taiwan is China, and that's China's view, and it always, you know, it has been, and it will continue to be. And they want to settle that peacefully. They do not want to go in and settle the Taiwan question militarily, because it would involve literally killing their own people, and they don't want to do that. It is not a it's not a productive way to go about it, going in and blowing up your own people and saying, there, now you're part of the mainland. They don't want to do that. However, if push comes to shove, they will do that. I mean, they will settle that question, you know, with a huge punctuation mark. They've been very upfront about that. It amazes me when you see these morons going on like Liz Truss. They always assume, because they lie with everything they say. Everything that comes out of their mouths is a lie. So when China comes out, people, you know, when you have officials, diplomats from China come out and say that, you know, the Taiwan question will be settled militarily, if that's what we have to do. We will not tolerate Taiwan trying to push for official independence. We will not tolerate the West coming in here and basically militarizing, setting up a base and things such as this in Taiwan to support the secessionists. We will not do that. We will not tolerate that. We will come in and settle that. And they act like it's a bluff. They, you know, just like they acted like, you know, Putin was bluffing for years as they talked about, we're not going to have Ukraine be in NATO. And, oh, well, he doesn't mean it, because they never mean anything they say. So they project that onto these other world leaders, these other officials, and act like they're lying, too. They don't mean anything they say. And they absolutely do mean what they say. Of course, getting back to Liz Truss, what's really frightening is I've read in places that, like, she's on like a short list to be up next. An ex-prime minister, no doubt she will bring back the glory days of the British Empire. Getting back to our story, her ambitions went beyond Europe, though, as Truss denounced the false choice between Euro-Atlantic security and Indo-Pacific security. In the modern world, we need both. We need global NATO, she said, and we must ensure that democracies like Taiwan are able to defend themselves. Pointing to London's unprecedented effort to embargo Russia, Truss insisted that economic access is no longer a given. It has to be earned, and that countries who wish to earn it must play by the rules, and that includes China. The UK has sent a large quantity of weapon systems to Ukraine over the past several months, including in-law anti-tank missiles and Stormer armored vehicles. British Armed Forces Minister James Happy told Thames Radio on Wednesday it would be completely legitimate for Ukraine to use UK-supplied weapons to strike into Russian territory, to which the Russian military warned that any such attack would be met with a proper response. Truss traveled to Russia in early February to threaten Moscow not to invade Ukraine, but ended up being widely mocked after multiple gaffes concerning geography. She first mistook the Baltic for the Black Sea in a BBC interview, then reportedly fell for a trick question, which Matt had alluded to earlier, from her Russian counterpart Lavrov, and insisted London would never recognize Russian sovereignty over Rostov and Voronezh. Russian regions she mistook for the Donbass republics of Donetsk and Lugansk. Starting her cabinet career as Undersecretary for Education and Child Care, and you can see why that would qualify her for the position she has now. In 2012, she has since held the Environmental Affairs, Justice, Treasury, and International Trade portfolios before replacing Dominic Raab as head of the Foreign Office in September 2021. My final thoughts on this story is, you know, NATO is not doing well with this Ukraine situation. They're essentially acting as though dealing with another major power, dealing with a country such as Russia, is no different than banning somebody like us from Twitter. I mean, really, it's like the West and NATO is totally winning this conflict on the internet, in the media. They're really calling Putin a lot of names in the news stories. But yet the facts on the ground remain the same. They really live – it just amazes me because they demonstrably live in a bubble that's to the point they think that they can create reality by what they put out in news stories, by what they put on the internet, what they put in the media. Like, that changes the reality. Meanwhile, the Russian military is continuing to achieve their objectives that they stated over and over. They keep step by step accomplishing what they set out to accomplish. The Western media runs around and says, oh, well, they failed to take Kiev. Well, they never said they wanted to take Kiev. That was never the stated objective. They pushed troops that direction to force the Ukrainians to keep some military that way, to split their forces to defend it just in case. But their stated objectives were always in the east of the country. Now, I do find it entertaining with that backdrop that NATO is basically failing in this regard. The sanctions on Russia have just been a complete joke. They backfired. They're basically sanctioning themselves here in the West because we're the ones suffering more than Russia. But I can't not help but to laugh at the very idea. I mean, except that it would be bad for my life personally, I really would like to see them try to sanction China. I mean, I would really, really like to see them try to do that because it would be so laughably disastrous. I mean, not just because, oh, well, China makes everything, but everything that is made in other countries. They say, oh, well, there's other options. We could go get our stuff from other countries. Oh, okay. This laptop is made in Indonesia, except the parts come from China. All China has to do is just simply blockade the U.S. Just say, well, we're not sending anything to you. We're not going to send you. And it would be just collapse the U.S. economy completely. That would be the end of it. You know, our economy is supposedly based on consumption. There wouldn't be anything to consume. There wouldn't be anything to go buy. It would be an utter and complete disaster. But this is how out of touch with reality these people is. This is what happens when people live in a bubble, detached from reality. They think they can they're so arrogant. They think they can create reality just by what they say, just by putting it in the media, just by talking about it on the internet, doing a press release, standing up there and doing a news conference. If they say it, they're so omnipotent, they actually speak it into reality. And yet reality is what it is. The Russian military continues to achieve its objectives. And if they do try to expand this into basically a two-front operation against China, it is going to be a disaster for them. But Matt, I'm sure that you are just – I can just see your brain locked up at the just amazing mental fortitude of Liz Truss.
Well, I'm very happy you brought her up because, I mean, this is we all have goals, and I guess she's mine to be as intelligent and insightful as she is. But you said, you know, this level of the bubble, and we talked about the bubble all over the place, which actually has relevance to Musk taking over Twitter because that bubble's going to be burst. But the arrogance that you're talking about can only come from the ignorance that I'm talking about. The inability to critically reflect on anything you have to say, the belief that your intelligence is based on what title you have, or even how much money you have, or who your connections are, that this Liz Truss truly believes that she's brilliant because, oh my God, look at the position I have. I mean, they're not going to put a dummy in here, you know. And it just, as you were reading, you know, it reminds me of Nixon near the end of the Vietnam War, trying to hand everything over to the South Vietnamese, despite the fact that they had crippled their they were totally dependent by 1971. We'll let the Vietnamese take care of all the, we have most supplies they need, all of which were completely irrelevant and didn't fit with everything else. Just like, it's very similar to Ukraine. well, we're not going to have troops there, although there's a lot of people who, you know, the ghost of John McCain is still around. But the second best thing is to have like a Contras in Nicaragua with irrelevant weaponry, with, you know, a brief training window, and expect something to happen, because they simply don't know. They don't know how militaries operate. They don't know how the wars of attrition versus lightning wars and all that. They have no clue. So this level of ignorance is, in fact, almost a condition of their promotion. And so the relevance here, of course, is that this bubble is going to burst when some of our stuff gets out there, if Musk is serious about what he's doing. So all of these things that we're dealing with today interact. But arrogance often comes from extreme ignorance. And in her case, that's exactly what it is.
They are heading for a fall, aren't they? Building themselves up with all of this false media, all these false claims about how Russia is losing in Ukraine. And I think there are going to be some very surprised liberals when they find out the truth. And I mean, we've got a similar situation in America, I believe, Matt, with the state of the American Air Force. Apparently, they're getting rid of their best planes because they're not flashy enough. Is that right?
Yeah, this is, you know, it's been an ongoing issue with me, that the U.S. military simply doesn't have the capacity to project force anymore. And when they do, the newspapers lie. American casualties were huge in these previous conflicts since the Cold War ended, but no one knows that. They have all these accounting techniques and everything else. And I've talked about the physical dilapidation of the U.S. military, especially the Air Force, because the Air Force is very costly. And I think, you know, I've uncovered with this story, which seems obscure but is not, some of the reasons why the U.S. military is in the position it is. And this concerns the A-10 Thunderbolt, known as the Warthog. And, you know, even people who don't know about this stuff have heard about it. It has a front cannon. It's low-flying. It's meant to support troops on the ground, which automatically for the Air Force is a problem. The A-10, the U.S. Air Force is doing everything it can to keep it, the existing ones from being repaired. They're waiting a long time, despite the fact that Congress and the Armed Services Committee commanded them that you're not going to destroy them. We need them. And so it looks like the way this is going now, that they're deliberately overusing it. This just came out yesterday. A couple days ago. This is a very recent news story. That they're overusing them to the point where they're going to start crashing and falling to pieces. And that seems to be a deliberate policy. And that's why this story has hit. The A-10 was an anti-armor. I think it was created in 1977 by a company that doesn't exist anymore. And it's popular in the Marine Corps and the Army because it flies low. And it's when they call for air support, this is what they're expecting to see. Now, there's a comment here from Staff General C.Q. Brown, and he was testifying on Services Committee at the House. And again, this is kind of how you have to read a news story. You need to understand what's not said as much as what's said. And he said, the A-10 is a great platform for a permissive environment. I don't see many permissive environments that we're going to roll into in the future. Now, what does that mean? Permissive environment means that the U.S. has unchallenged air superiority, and these planes can fly with impunity. But saying that we're not going to be in these environments in the future can only mean two things: war with Russia or China or both. So I've said many times that, you know, naval aviation is about 50% unflyable. The Air Force, depending on where you go, is maybe one-third unflyable. But when you talk about we're talking about unnecessary deaths here, both on the ground and among Americans. The A-10 has worked. I know Grandpa's well aware of this, people who, you know, have come across this before. And despite being commanded to maintain this, they've refused. In fact, they've gone so far as to shut down the companies that create the wings, which is one of the first things that goes, there's cracks all over the place, and now has to start the bidding process again and restart these companies' production lines. So as days go by, more and more are put out of commission, despite this being the number one plane for infantry. But why would this even matter unless they are planning something with a power where they're not going to have immediate air superiority? The other reason that this has come up is because you have both British and American policymakers that want these, you know, warthogs sent to Ukraine. Now, I guarantee you, there's not a single Ukrainian who knows how to fly these. They certainly don't have. They don't have the spare parts in America, let alone having the spare parts in Ukraine. So these are just symbolic things. But the Air Force has tried to destroy this plane at least since 2014, and every year Congress says you're not going to do this. Now, there's a few issues here. In and of itself, it doesn't seem to be. It seems to be just a military-only issue. But we talk about the trillions that go into the military every year. How could this possibly be happening? They should be dripping in money. Well, we know that they have third world accounting techniques. I've been over this a million times when Ernst & Young tried to audit the Pentagon and said we can't because record keeping is so bad. They lie so much. The corruption is so endemic that we can't even audit a piece of it, let alone the whole thing, which also means military really has no idea what it has or where the money goes. The A-10 is a Grumman plane. The way that it's broken down, if there's a war with Russia, this is because Russia has, you know, 10 times the tanks that the U.S. has. This is going to be the Grumman contribution to the war effort. What the Air Force is doing is pushing, or they want to put money into the F-35, which is infinitely more expensive. That is made by Lockheed, and it's meant to go deep into enemy territory, specifically with China. Now, the assumption is that the Chinese Air Force isn't worth anything. The Russian Air Force is. So there's two issues. Actually, there's three issues. First of all, it's the companies that make them. This is a fight between Grumman and Lockheed. And we can't underestimate when we talk about what military decides to make or not make. It's who wins the lobbying war, which one of these companies, and Boeing and a few others. Second issue is that the war is going to be, in their minds, either with China or Russia. Of course, they don't realize that it means both automatically because they have treaties over this thing. F-35 with China, the A-10 with Russia because Russia is very dependent on its armor. And finally, the fact that the Air Force is willing to risk pilots because they hate the idea that their A-10 is meant to give greater glory to ground forces. Now, this is a serious matter. The whole purpose of the A-10 is to support the Marine Corps and the Army at the front. They hate this idea because now the Air Force is going to get the glory. The infantry will. And no matter who you ask about this, everyone loves the A-10, especially in non-Air Force. You have an A-10 lobbying group because of the age. It seems to be a losing battle. It's the only aircraft here that is designed to perform a close air missions. But the Air Force loves the expensive, fast, super high-flying aircraft capable of hitting targets far beyond or behind enemy lines with the belief, and I think this is more of a cover story, that, well, we want to fight wars without infantry at all. And if we have this 35, we can go deep into enemy territory and destroy their infrastructure, and we don't need troops at all. Those supporting the A-10 are saying that no infantry is absolutely, absolutely necessary. So it really falls in what branch you're in. It falls in which conflict you're interested in and what corporation is financing it. The story here is that it's, you know, I've read somewhere, someone used an example. You know, when a landlord wants to destroy a building, I'm sorry, wants to build something new, wants to destroy his building, but for some reason he can't, like zoning regulations or whatever, then what he's going to do is just not maintain the building anymore, allow it to decay to the point where tearing down the thing becomes the only viable option left. And the Air Force is doing precisely that. But what it means is, number one, they're fighting the law here, because the law is they can't do this, but they're doing it anyway. They're using every accounting trick you can imagine to permit these things to fall apart. Refusing. I mean, now you'll have more than half the fleet in real numbers, but can't fly at all. And it's gotten so bad that General James Post, the major general, I think, he was in Nevada, and he warned airmen or anyone in uniform, giving them positive information. He's Air Force General, of course. Positive information about the 810 could qualify as treason. Then he says, well, if anyone accuses me of saying this, I'm just going to deny it. Anyone who is passing information to Congress about the 810 capabilities is committing treason. That was at the Nellis Air Force Base. That's a military blog where that came out. Now, he's done damage control since then. But that's how serious this is, that he wants to throw people in the brig for this. And, you know, so you have all these variables going on. You have the corporation, you have the future conflict, and you have the branch of the service. You know, so what's happening, they're deploying these squadrons overseas many, many times, accelerating the fleet's deterioration. That, of course, gives the Air Force a better argument that, no, we can't maintain the 810 anymore. It's in such terrible condition, we have to retire it. But despite the fact that they're using it all the time, and the purpose is actually to destroy it. And that means that its missions are going to be destroyed. Its pilots are going to be killed. And this has been going on, you know, where the Air Force leaders have been trying to shrink the budget of the A-10 for maintenance for maybe even more than 2040, maybe 20 years. Air Force generals don't like the Warthog because it's not complex. It's not super expensive. And therefore, they can't go to Congress and demand more and more and more money. And because it places the Air Force in a supporting role, they hate it. Understand, their policy is that we're gonna use our very expensive fast planes to bomb the interior of any country we don't like. That's going to give the Air Force all the glory. That is definitely that's definitely relevant. Now, I'm not so sure about the claim that it can't function in a non-permissive environment. It probably can't. It's too old for that. The Air Force wants to put all this money into hypersonics and all these new projects, many of which have failed entirely. And I've talked about that on here before. But the whole notion comes down to money. So it comes down to money, and it comes down to lobbying. The F-35 is Lockheed's baby, and they're extremely – but so is Grumman. So this is a battle between – so American foreign policy, therefore, is being made by at least these two companies. But what the next theater of operation – we talked about Taiwan. The theory there is, well, the Chinese Air Force doesn't matter. So that's what Lockheed is claiming. Lockheed wants war with China. Grumman wants war with Russia. And these are very, you know, general statements. But foreign policy is based on these things, where the money is going to go, where it won't go. And so someone reads a news report like this and doesn't realize just how significant it is. The fact that this general goes in public and says, our wars in the future are not going to be permissive ones, meaning they're going to go up against advanced air forces. Which means there's something – I mean, maybe not meant to say that. And why the hell would talking about the A-10 be considered treason? And he's being a general backtracked on that. That's a very severe matter. And the whole notion that they're willing to destroy this because they want the glory of these deep, fast, high-flying bombing raids and are willing to lose men, are willing to lose airplanes, deliberately destroying it despite the fact that they're going against the law. Now – I've said for a long time that since 9/11 or even before, the worship of the U.S. military has gotten way out of hand. I've argued in the past that this worship allows them to do whatever the hell they want. They live in the same bubble that we're talking about here, that they think that they're invincible despite the realities. Medals, they pin medals on themselves all the time. Medals are, you know, five times what they were in World War II despite the miserable failures. You know, the U.S. military, and, you know, military would be great if they'd actually do their job and defend our borders, but they're not. It's a liberal institution supporting a liberal agenda abroad, as this trust idiot made very clear. And of course, this comes back again because of the Ukrainian conflict. Now, they're saying, well, Russia is very armor dependent. Therefore, we need to give them somehow flying lessons, I don't know, on this plane that they have no spare parts for. So there's so many issues going on here. And people don't realize that foreign policy has these antecedents. Corporations, the demands of the different services, the arrogance of this ruling class military that believes itself so extraordinary and worshipped by the public, all of a sudden there's no anti-war movement anymore, as there was in the early 70s, that we can do as we please. And one of the reasons that the Pentagon could not be audited, one of the reasons that there's misappropriation of funds, one of the reasons that the Air Force thinks they could do whatever it pleases, refusing to follow Congress's demands on this every year, it gets worse and worse, is because, well, we're the U.S. military. What are you going to do? We're worshipped by the population, and therefore we can do as we please. In this case, though, we're talking about a whole bunch of things, but people are going to die deliberately because of this. So when I talk about the Navy falling apart, when I talk about the armor falling apart and all the rest of it, my God, is it because of this kind of thing or no? And that's a big issue here.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. The idea that you would sacrifice people, basically, and sacrifice airplanes just so that, you know, to satisfy a struggle between one company and another company, and just to say that it wouldn't work unless it's in a permissive theater. I mean, that's effectively saying that what America does is just bombs the hell out of a country, completely flattens it, and then flies its airplanes in for all the glory. And of course, you're not going to be able to do that against Russia, not going to be able to do that against China. So you think this is signaling that is what their intentions are, Matt, that they're going to actually go for a hot war against either Russia or China?
It's possible. I mean, we've been talking about that, this with the global NATO and everything else. The Russian military has warned, as we also mentioned, that any hits on our territory, we're blaming the U.S. or NATO for this. It seems that they're not. I don't think the grunt, the private, the corporal, want this at all. And I think the desertion problem is going to be huge, especially these morale-destroying decisions. I think the Air Force general that I quoted said something he wasn't supposed to. He says, I don't see anything in these permissive environments. I think he said more than he wanted to. And people who know what he really meant by that, yeah, I think that's exactly correct.
Well, it also interests me that they haven't started talking about handing these planes over to Ukraine. You know, they're out of date now. We can always hand them over to Ukraine and train them up to use them. Never mind the fact that all the Ukraine airfields have been taken out and they don't actually have anybody that can fly these planes anymore. And they'd also have to be integrated with everything else, as we've talked about before. I mean, Poland is talking about giving them planes. America was talking about giving them planes a while back, but it doesn't. All of that is also really just fueling the war and encouraging the war and keeping it going by handing these weapons over to them. It's like taking an active role in it, which is going to end up killing Russian soldiers. Eventually, Russia is going to be forced to retaliate, I think. Grandpa, you're probably more aware of these planes than I am. What do you think of this story about these warthogs here?
Well, I think our overall theme for the show could be the bubble, because a lot of this stuff is really comes back to that concept of these people living in a bubble. And you see that in the government, you see that in the military. It's like the military and the government are a giant Twitter, where anybody who says, well, this is a bad idea, is basically banned. There's no meritocracy. They only want people surrounding them that agree with them. Now, you see this constant when you hear people that make the argument that they laugh, they mock foolishly at the idea of a conflict with Russia and China because America, buddy, let me tell you something. America still got the biggest military. Our military can't be touched by anyone. They couldn't win in Afghanistan, but please don't pay attention to that. America's got the strongest military, and don't you ever forget it. What they're talking about is money spent. They spent, of course, Matt's already pointed to the massive amounts of corruption. Nobody even knows where this money goes. The motivation here is these high-ranking officers. One of the motivations here is these high-ranking officers already looking ahead to their high-paying job at Lockheed Martin. They're taking care of themselves. This is the way it works. It works this way in every branch of the government. Like Matt said, you've got these people that worship the military as though they're not a part of the government. But they are. They are a part of the government. It's like people that are like, they'll take my gun from my cold, dead fingers. But they drive around with their, blue stripe American flags in the back window because I bleed blue and support my law enforcement. It's like, well, if the government decides to come take your gun, who the hell do you think they're going to send? They're going to send the cops. How do you put all of that you know, how do you put all of that together and make it make some sort of sense? The military is just like the government. It's just another part, rather, I'm sorry, of the government. It's like Janet Yellen. You know, she was head of the Federal Reserve. Now she's Treasury Secretary. It's just this revolving door. So many of these high-ranking officers wind up going to work for a company like Lockheed for these huge salaries. So, of course, they know that part of getting that gig is that you've got to serve up, you've got to butter the toast for Lockheed Martin when you're in a position to do so. I think it is laughable. Matt referenced, you know, that they essentially dismissed the Chinese Air Force. And I read a story, it's been several, probably a month ago, because time gets away from me because I'm getting old. And the U.S. was doing one of their provocative fly close to China's territory because we don't recognize it as China's territory. And they were flying one of these, I believe it's the F-35, supposed to be a stealthy fighter. And China launched a couple of their versions. And the Americans were taken aback because they didn't see them coming. The Chinese fighter jets intercepted them and were on top of them before they even knew they were there. But once again, this comes back to the bubble. They live in this bubble that, oh, that we have our military is one thing of our government that does still function, even though evidence says otherwise. The evidence is all to the contrary. One of my favorite illustrations of this, how moronic this idea is, and I know Dr. Johnson's pointed out to it, is of course, we're talking about hardware in this story. The A-10 Warthog is actually, it's an old airplane that actually does its job. Imagine that. But of course, it's the human resource, the human capital just isn't there. My favorite illustration of this is the ship that burned up. I mean, just burned up. It became useless. They had to total the ship in harbor, and I believe it was San Diego. And when they did their investigation, is how did this happen? Because it's a ship, you know, it's supposed to go into combat. And if you're a ship in combat, you know whoever you're fighting is going to be spamming high explosive rounds at you, and you're going to catch on fire. I mean, that is Navy Battles 101. So they, of course, have a fire suppression system on the ship. And they're like, how did this ship burn up? Well, it turned out somebody set the ship on fire on purpose. But moreover, they're like, why didn't the fire suppression system work? And it turned out that there was nobody on the bridge that understood how to operate it. And to make matters worse, the system amounted to a big red button that said, in case of fire, push button. And they said when they interviewed the bridge personnel, they were like, well, we weren't really sure what the big red fire button did. So nobody went over and pushed it, and they stood around, let the ship burn up. Now, when this is laughable, it's funny because it's so stupid. But you have to put this in the context of, as we've covered already, they're essentially provoking a two-front war now with Russia and China. They're trying to play all of these word games and do like their lawyer speak. And, well, we're not technically entering the war against Russia in the Ukraine, but we're going to supply all of this military hardware. When they came out with this idea, and I believe this is happening, and I believe it'll get revealed more and more as this drags on. But when they came up with this idea, we're going to send volunteers to Ukraine. The first thing I said is, oh, well, I see how this is going to work. They'll go to, say, UK military or the US military, and they'll round up a bunch of fighters, and they'll say, okay, technically now you are discharged, but now you're going to be part of the volunteer force, and you'll get more money, and we're going to send you to the Ukraine. They act as though Russia and China, they're going to just let this, you know, the semantic games, you know, these word games. Well, look here, technically we're not doing that. UK, we're going to send weapons. It's fine if they fire them into Russia because we're not firing them. We're just sending them all these weapons and telling them you've got the green light to shoot them into Russia. And Russia is not going to retaliate. They act like this is going to work. Like I said earlier, they act as though this is no different than banning somebody from Twitter. That it doesn't have any larger effect. All of this comes together from the stories we've done today, and it all comes together, I think, to a common point that at some point it is inevitable that for these people, reality is going to come crashing in. They live in a bubble. They surround themselves with yes men. They don't. There is no meritocracy. The corruption is run rampant. They think they can create a reality just by saying what they want things to be. But at some point, and I believe it's coming sooner rather than later, reality is going to come crashing down.
That bubble just has to burst, doesn't it? Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. We will probably be back at some time in the future with more round tables for you. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. And, of course, we do hope you have a great bank holiday May Day ahead of you.
When that's the round table, we dance where we're able. We do routines, to call the scenes, to footwork in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot.